I'm Carol Hills, and this is The World. We're a co-production of the BBC World Service, PRI, and WGBH in Boston. Of the many migrations happening around the world, one that doesn't get much attention is the journey African migrants make across Egypt into Israel. Tens of thousands have made the trip, so the Israeli government came up with a plan to deal with the asylum seekers. It started a secret program to encourage them to go away. Andrew Green conducted a year-long investigation for Foreign Policy magazine. Andrew, this whole process is pretty complicated. As a way to explain it, tell us about the man you met, whom you call Samin.
Yes, so I met Afi Samin in the capital of Uganda, Kampala, which was really the tail end of his journey. It started, he fled Eritrea and ended up in Israel many years ago and worked there for 7 years. But he came in at a time when tens of thousands of African refugees were coming into Israel via Egypt. And the Israeli government was starting to feel as if they were being overwhelmed by the number of new arrivals. So they basically tried to create a system to encourage the African asylum seekers to leave the country. And that started with the creation of a detention center in the desert called Holot.
Now, in your article, you talk about how Samin had been able to stay in Israel by checking in every several months with immigration. So at some point he checks in and then they take him to this detention camp?
Exactly. He just got a notice that said he had a few days to get all of his stuff together and move to this camp. And he was basically told that he could be held there indefinitely. And then several months into his stay in Holot, he was contacted by officials at the camp who told him that there was another option if he didn't want to stay. He could take a transfer to a third country. He was told it was a country in East Africa. He would arrive there, be given refugee status, have the right to work, and he would get $3,500 in addition to a one-way ticket.
So they were essentially offering a somewhat permanent placement in a third country and saying that all of this is taken care of, you'll have permission, and it'll be legal for you to stay there and live there.
Exactly, which for Afi was exactly what he was looking for. You know, he had no real attachment to Israel. He was just looking for a place where he wasn't going to be forced into military service as he had been in Eritrea, where he could just work and have a job and set up a life.
So he agrees to go. They fly him to Rwanda. And what happens next?
So before he left, he had been told that by the Israeli authorities that when he landed in Kigali, the capital of Rwanda, he would be given all the paperwork he needed, including refugee status. But then when he landed, a man met Afi along with the 11 other Eritreans he traveled with, and he took their paperwork that they'd been given in Tel Aviv, and then he led them around the immigration services at the airport. So they never got anything stamped. They never got any official documentation that they had arrived in Rwanda. And that's when he really started to get nervous. And then at that point, they were taken to a house where this man who had picked them up at the airport told them that they had a choice. Either they could live permanently in this house, not be allowed to work, or they could sneak into Uganda illegally. He would charge them some money to do that. He would take them to the border. He would drop them off. And then they would basically just be on their own.
So you're saying as soon as he arrives in Rwanda with the other Eritreans, they bypass immigration, take him to this house, he's being advised to go to Uganda illegally.
Exactly. Less than 24 hours after he's arrived in the country where he's supposed to, be setting up his new life, he's being told, never mind, none of the things we promised you are actually going to come to pass, and we're going to charge you money to illegally smuggle you into Uganda, where you will have no papers, and you will have no refugee status, and you will have none of the things that the Israeli authorities told you that you were going to have.
And through your research, you realize there are other people like him, but they're being sent to other countries.
Right. So there are two main groups of asylum seekers who made their way to Israel. You have the Eritreans, but then also a cohort of Sudanese, especially survivors of the genocide in Darfur. So the Eritreans are sent to Rwanda and the Sudanese are sent to Uganda. And in Uganda, when the Sudanese arrive, they're being faced with the exact same system, except they're being encouraged to either go to South Sudan or even back to Sudan itself, which can be incredibly dangerous for many of them because they're, escapees of a genocide. Some of them are seen as political enemies of the regime still in Khartoum. So they're being put at risk by the system.
So in all your reporting, you found a whole bunch of Africans who have been through this process in slight variations, but essentially the same thing. What is the evidence that this is an organized program and the Israeli government knows about it?
So that's the real crux of the issue. I spoke to officials in Israel, Rwanda, and Uganda, and all of them deny any knowledge of this system existing. But I also managed to track down some people who were involved in the process of pressuring the African asylum seekers to leave Uganda, including one man who seemed to have been hired by the Ministry of Internal Affairs in Uganda and had documentation to back that up for helping encourage the Sudanese refugees to leave the country. He helped organize their flight to either South Sudan or Sudan. And he was adamant that there was high-level government involvement and that this process basically couldn't have existed without Ugandan officials not just being aware of it, but also participating in it. The question of Israeli complicity is a little bit more difficult to nail down, but these reports have now filtered back to the Israeli administration. They're aware of these claims, and they've really, they claim that they've investigated them, but they've really done nothing to stop this from happening. I mean, this process still continues.
Is this on its face illegal?
That's the key question, and that's where organizations like UNHCR and other human rights groups are looking into it. So on its face, if the asylum seekers were given what they're promised, which is, refugee status in the third country, right to work, and all the other promises are met, then, it seems that this could be a viable system, although you can question the ethics of it. But where it might run afoul of international refugee law is that if these asylum seekers are being forced into situations where they are potentially subject to persecution or death, as has been the case, some of these men have ended up trying to cross the Mediterranean and dying after they've been forced out of Rwanda and Uganda. Some have been captured by ISIS and killed in Libya. Then that would be a violation of non-refoulement, which is an international policy that you can't force asylum seekers or refugees into these kind of situations where they might be persecuted or killed.
Has the Israeli government or the Ugandan government, Rwandan, have any of them responded to your article?
I have not heard from them since publication. Before we went to press, I kind of ran some of the key findings by them to say that this is what we were going to publish. They all deny any kind of involvement. The Israeli government has acknowledged in a court case that they sent agents to look into some of these claims, but they never actually found any evidence of the system taking place, which would seem to indicate that they didn't really scratch too far beneath the surface.
Andrew Green reporting on Israel's system for exporting African migrants to a third country. Thanks, Andrew.
Thank you.